25th, about 3:30, present Representative Fuller, Representative Duncan, Representative Sun, myself, also with us are Representative Porchot and Representative Frank. Today, we have House Bills 477 and 699. I'm going to get through those, and we also have House Bill 135, but we'll try to get through these other items first. And for those of you who want to testify, we'll treat both 477 and 699 together. And perhaps for the committee, I could walk through what we've done here. House Bill 699 is a bill introduced by the Finance Committee a couple weeks ago, but it basically establishes a rail-belt energy fund within the general fund. And there's a basic bill there that appropriate. It consists of any money appropriated to it by the legislature. The Department of Revenue shall manage the fund, and any interest earned on the fund is to be accounted for separately and may be appropriated back into the fund by the legislature, but it does not go into the fund automatically. I personally feel that's a dedication problem. And the legislature may appropriate money from the fund to assist in meeting any rail-belt energy needs. Now, to fund that fund within the general fund is House Bill 477, and it's, as all good appropriation and reappropriation bills are, it's 3 pages long to accomplish a couple of fairly simple goals here. The purpose here is to take the $200 million that was appropriated last year under the continuing appropriation and reappropriate it into this rail belt energy fund. And you can see in Section 1, 2, and 3 of the bill repeal sections of the law that were found unconstitutional, the continuing appropriation portions. Section 4 of the bill appropriates $200 million into the rail belt energy fund. Section 5 of the bill is a $50 million appropriation for the purposes of financing Bradley Lake hydroelectric project. That does not go into the rail belt energy fund. It's a direct appropriation to the APA. Section 6 of the bill is $21.7 million for power cost equalization. Again, that's appropriated directly to the APA for the power cost equalization program. And the continuing appropriation portion of the statute dealing with power cost equalization is repealed in Section 7. Section 8 goes back and repeals the continuing appropriation portion of the statute that deal with the Susitna River hydroelectric project. And that was a $100 million appropriation that was made in 1984. And that section is repealed. And the unexpended, unobligated portion of that still remains is reappropriated from the Power Development Fund into the Rail Belt Energy Fund. And perhaps, Mr. Heath, you can let us know how much of what that number is. And the continuing appropriation portion of the Bradley Lake appropriation is also repealed. And then there's various effective dates on this act in sections 11 and 12. Are there any questions on that? Okay, we have a couple people who wanted to testify. Mr. Heath, do you want to make some comments?
For the record, my name is Bob Heath, Executive Director of the Alaska Power Authority. We've been looking over House Bill 699, and while in general agreement with its intents and purposes, I do want to toss out some thoughts and hopefully get some suggestions back. One is we have some concern that it might be construed as special legislation.
Okay.
The methodology here would require a precise budgeting process, which would, in all probability, unless we work out a different mechanism, force us to come in for higher budgets than we would have otherwise. Because once you're in the middle of drilling holes in 100-foot centers and find fragmented rock, you need to drill in 50-foot centers, and it doesn't happen to be in session, I'm in trouble. That's sort of a problem. I will express a little concern that I hope the same bills come out of the Senate. I would hate for there to be two different bills doing roughly the same thing. The it does cause us to either plan longer. For instance, the Bradley Lake situation, to which we're going to earn somewhere between $20 and $40 million for the benefit of the state of Alaska, would be much more difficult to do on any short time frame. Not impossible if it happened to be in session. For instance, this last one, we were pushing through like crazy to get it in A, before the December rush, and B, before the law potentially changed on January the 1st, that type of a situation. I don't know the answer to this, my last comment, but I wonder if it would be possible for LBNA to have an appropriation, and then at that, in the event something unforeseen happened, they would have the authority to pass it out, or they would have to oversee it. I'm asking the question. Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know either. I don't have a real problem with, and one of the comments I didn't make here in the opening was for, you know, the APA to operate these projects through the normal budget process, and Representative Frank is with us, and I think he works on the APA budget, but to submit a budget and say this is what it costs, and some form of estimation of how we're proceeding on that, I don't personally have any problem. On the budget and audit question, I don't know. Perhaps Representative Duncan, do you know? Or
well, I'm not quite sure, but
the issue is
the appropriation would be made with legislative budget audit oversight. Is that, that's what you're saying,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, we would have a normal budget as we believe things are going to happen.
As I understand the present system, the way budget audit works, and as a result of the court cases, we can't have veto power. We can advise you not to spend money, but you don't have to. Way I think the administration works.
That's my understanding.
So it would work as long as there was cooperation, I guess.
Well, we've been cooperating.
I'm not saying that she wouldn't cooperate. But
no, I'm just curious that there could be a contingency fund set aside, yeah, in the LBNA that if something unforeseen happened, there would be a methodology available to us.
Yeah, I guess that would work. I don't think there's a legal problem, maybe.
Representative
AG's office.
Bob, I'm not sure I understand why that would be different than Health and Social Services running out of the AFDC and having to come back here. Maybe I've missed the point. If we gave you $12 million to pursue
some
certain
project.
Power projects, mm-hmm. And you're saying if something came up, you might want to have a reserve, another appropriation that LBNA had control on that you could go to them in the middle of the year and get $12 million.
If rather than demobilizing a contractor,
well, how would we? What would be our justification for wanting to do that, as opposed to any other necessary? I wonder if the troopers ran out of manpower and we had an epidemic of child abuse in Fairbanks, and they came in. I mean, we normally go through a supplemental process in that case. I'm wondering why would this situation be different than other DOT projects or.
Unless I'm wrong, the supplemental process would start with the following session. My problems will start in the middle of the summer if I have a problem.
Well, then let's take a DOT example. Why would that be different than the Boniface interchange project in Anchorage?
I specifically don't know the situation.
Well, there. Or any construction project.
Any construction project. Well, if you run out of funds, you've mobilized a contractor in the middle of nowhere, and you run out of funds, the only thing you can do is demob him and then come back and request a supplemental, which will now not be $2 million, but it'll be $3 million, because I've got to mob the guy back into some remote place. I'm saying it would cost the state money.
I think perhaps the situation, the difference in the Boniface thing is probably a bid project. It's a turnkey bid deal. It's been all spec'd out. The guy says, I'll deliver X product for X price, and he's off on his own. And if you run into some unforeseen circumstances, they usually you dig in and you finish it, and you fight about whether they should have been told in the plans ahead of time or not. In your situation, it would probably work if you're on spec on a bid project, but if you're on a cost plus deal and you ran into extra monies you wouldn't know. But It seems like if you bid it and they said, I'll build you a road for $9 million. They'll build it and you'll pay $9 million.
If it's a claim situation, I can certainly understand that. As some of your DOT is just pure claims. And the contractors are willing to, quite often. Contractors are carrying it. They finish the project. But they're carrying it until a supplemental can be obtained.
Yeah. I agree with you. I think it'll take a little bit more planning, and it's a little very difficult to fast-track a project if you're on a planned and fixed budget, because you don't have those contingency funds there for unexplained or unexpected problems.
John?
Generally slows you down. Representative Fuller?
I think also DOT has the ability to move some funds around. Yeah, which you don't have, right?
I don't have that. I'm tied.
Yeah. I'd like to know Representative Euling's with us also. Representative Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Heath, are you talking about an actual construction project, or are you talking about studies or a combination of both of those kinds of situations?
Really a combination, Representative Frank. So many of these, some of these, especially when you're in reconnaissance level, those aren't hard dollars. They say go out and punch some holes, and then it looks like you need to punch more holes.
Would it be too cumbersome to annually submit a budget that would have specific projects identified in it and specific dollar amounts for the various projects? Whether it was reconnaissance or an actual construction project?
Yeah, the other ones have to sit there.
No,
I don't know.
No problem to that. I'm just concerned in those situations where something is started and suddenly stopped for lack of funds that shouldn't be stopped at that point in time. And as I say, the other alternative is me coming to you and asking for budgets with healthy contingencies in them. Is a way to do it.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily prefer that methodology.
If I could continue, is your concern mostly with regard to the ongoing Susitna project, and not having the flexibility to finish those studies or finish those things?
Not necessarily the Susitna project, but it would be any project where you're trying. Well, we're looking at geothermal out on Alaska right now, for instance.
So right now you have the ability to use theoretically any of the monies that have been appropriated to Susitna for any appropriate studies or anything without coming back to the legislature.
Except by legislative intent that said don't do that.
Right. Okay.
And we haven't.
Thank you.
I guess the other question, Bob, was one of the provisions of 477 was in the $100 million appropriation in 1984, there's a section 10 of the bill takes the unexpended, unobligated, and unencumbered balance of the appropriation and puts it in the Rail Build Energy Fund. Now, that would be as of the effective date of this act, which...
And that effective date would be
whenever the governor signs 699 into effect. So at some point, do you have any rough idea what's the remaining balance in that fund? Let's just say as of the end of May, probably.
I don't have one even that far, unfortunately.
End of April?
End of February is what I have in front of me. $75 million. Plus an available balance of $2.9 million. And that budget has been dropped so rapidly, and in the next several days it's going to drop further. I'm sure that that number will be larger than $75 million, but I can't give you an accurate number right now.
So it's plus $75 million plus, something like that. Jim, do you have a question?
No, I guess you're going to have...
Yeah, he's right.
Okay.
Yes. Any other questions of Bob?
Mr. Chairman.
Dealing?
So
Bob, maybe you could explain. So what would be the total amount that would go into the Rail Belt Energy Development if we included Section 10 of the bill, which was what you indicated to be $75 million plus 2.9? That would be 77.9. Would that be 77.9 plus the 200 million from Section 4, so that would be 279 million?
Right.
Okay, so my math is okay.
What did you say? What did you come up with? 277.9.
That number will increase.
It will increase?
Please.
Yeah, it's going to increase because the amount of funding, I think Bob indicated in our last meeting that they're spending now on cleaning up Susitna, that budget's getting refined and there will be a larger balance left.
And considering the activities the last several days, it will have to drop off quite rapidly.
Yeah, there's just for the members, notice the resolutions adopted by the APA board yesterday are in your file here. So maybe you could give us a brief comment of what the resolution is.
Well, the resolutions involved in this are the final resolutions. The draft plan of finance proposing use of permanent fund revenues is unacceptable and is rejected. And direct staff to immediately enter into consultation with FERC to develop procedures for the presentation and maintenance of all relevant data, studies, and information that's sitting in the basin produced to date. Direct staff after these consultations to withdraw the two dam license application, and direct staff to maintain all of our studies within house, and directs us to undertake a program to undertake a complete update, review, and examination of all potential alternative sources of electrical energy for meeting rail belt requirements by an independent third party.
Now, on that point there, Bob, are you going to, I guess, you know, there's going to be some funding issues there. Is it the proposal for APA to put a fund or a finance proposal together to do that and bring that back to the legislature? Or?
That is correct. The board to authorize and support sufficient funds is as needed, not to exceed $4 million.
Okay. Representative Cotton.
Just real quick, I'll change the subject here. Have you got 477 in front of you there?
Yes, sir.
This CES by the Loans Committee?
Yeah. Yep.
The business on the power cost equalization, I know that Chapter 171 listed 21.7 as the number, but that I think a different number has been used to accommodate the needs rather than 21.7. Is that true?
It's true that the whole 21.7 was not needed.
What number
in that year?
What number is anticipated for need for FY87?
FY87 is going to be right at the 21.7.
Oh, I see.
But this one, no. FY86 was less than 21.7. I don't have those numbers in front of me, but I can certainly get them.
Oh, that was in 1984.
Oh, 84?
Yeah. But
was there going to be a lapse for FY86 then?
There will be excess funds, and I'm not familiar. One fund, as I remember, lapses, and the other, as 1 year lapses and the other one doesn't. I believe 84 does not lapse, and FY85 does not lapse, but FY86 does lapse, as I believe.
Yeah.
Situation.
The way this bill's put together, Section 6 is an appropriation of $21.7 million. Section 7 is a cleanup of the statutes, removing the continuing language of the statute where it says continuing appropriation.
Okay, sure. 1184.
Okay, well, I had another question, Bob. Back on the resolution here, on the last page, the board's authorized sufficient funds as needed not to exceed $4 million. Now, is that an anticipation to take that $4 million comes out of the power development fund?
I believe that would be our intent, but that's not what this says.
Okay. I guess, Steve, you guys can deal with that in the budget process somewhere along the way. Representative Porcio.
Mr. Chairman, I just comment. I mean, on the surface, that sounds like bad news. Maybe the good news is we're not spending 20.
Well, we've all talked about it. I mean, we have to spend some money to find out and work on this problem, solve the problem, and just a question of how much money it's going to be, who's going to do it, and where the appropriation. And my point would be to take it through the regular line item process in the budget. If we can pin it down, if you can't, you got to put some contingency funding into it.
Mr. Chairman, I should have a very tentative budget showing where these funds would go by tomorrow. I should have it by today, but I haven't.
I had a couple of general questions, Bob, regarding Bradley Lake, and if you had any idea of when Bradley comes online, what the sale of power is going to be to the communities. What's the wholesale cost of power going to be?
Figuring as I remember, at 12% interest, it's about 6.7 cents. That's $200 million in debt and 12% interest. That's based on memory. I've been unable to check that fact.
It seems like you're not going to go for your long-term debt till the project's finished. I guess that's a couple of years from now. But do you have any idea how much that changes for each percentage point of interest that would drop? Say you could come in at 9% or something on that order. Is the debt service a real large component of the 6.7 cents?
Oh yes, the O&M is something like 0.3. So debt service is the O&M is very small on that one.
How are the power sales agreements worked out in terms of selling that power? I just have this ongoing fear that we're going to have gas sales up there at 3 cents or less if the price of fuel stays down, and you're going to come on board with Bradley at 6.7, and people are going to say we don't want to buy it. I think we went through that with the four dam pool issue, and I just wondered how the power sales agreements are worked out with Bradley on that issue.
They're take and pay contracts with two utilities.
And that's what, Chugach and?
Chugach and Homer, 80-20 respectively. And I don't think they're all that tight. They're tight enough.
Is there a plan for any ramping in here, for a rate ramp to kind of bridge across from the thermal cost into the hydro cost, or is it just they have to buy this power and merge it into their overall power sales?
The plan, as I understand it, is just to merge it in with the rest of their sales, so the effect will be fairly small. And at 9% interest, that number comes down, so I'll have to get you that information.
Yeah. Fairly small is a real, real small amount when it comes to dealing with rail belt power, I found out. Representative Porcio.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The chairman's been trying to alert us to possible pitfalls, and I think your explanation of why Bradley, in the face of cheap gas turbine power that we asked last time, you did indicate that there was clearly long-range advantages compared to gas that may go up or gas that may be exhausted, but I think Chairman does raise a concern, maybe, that if so much is debt service, I guess my question is, what's the downside risk? What would be the ramifications on this 6.7 cent kilowatt charge if the debt service were to run high? If the utilities, as I understand, committed up to $200 million, we're at $200 million. Wonder if we have overruns. Wonder if somehow we absorb more debt or get into a larger debt situation. I don't know, but let's just, for example, say instead of 200, you know, 250. What does that mean in terms of kilowatt charge based on debt service?
we could, one of two things would happen is we would either be asked as a state to come up with some more money, or the utilities would be asked to shoulder that burden. We do have the small, not small, it's, in my mind is large. We anticipate making between 20 and 40 million on an arbitrage transaction, which would also be available to protect us from cost overruns of any major dimensions. So that is there.
I guess I have a couple follow-up questions. Mm-hmm. Do you have any feel for how likely a scenario that we were, if we were taking some of your fellow revenue projector peoples on a, putting it on a 50 percentile or 30 percentile, how comfortable are you with the existing assumption of debt service and repayment on the split between equity, what the companies have agreed to assume relative to the project costs as you see them?
I'm actually quite comfortable with the situation as it presently stands. We have had bidders from as far away as Red China intending to bid on the first contract on Bradley, and there will be at least two Koreans and one Japanese firm bidding on it. With that kind of indication of interest, we have something like 175 plan sets out. I suspect we can get some decent prices, at least on this phase, albeit this is the smallest piece of it.
As you say, then I assume the interest rate that you've programmed it for, 12%, if interest rates would hold, which, you know, knows, but if they would remain 9, then I assume that is some real savings.
Some very real savings. And I will get back to the full committee precisely what that means, since it's some simple mathematical computation. What I don't have is the output of Bradley over a year with me.
I guess maybe just to clarify what my concerns have been is that over the extreme amount of interest we've had in the change in the rail belt energy cost because of the DNR policy on gas, which amounts to about $1.50 or $2 a month to the average Chugach consumer, and the extreme amount of pressure that's being put on this legislature to do something about that, that when Bradley comes on at 6.5 or 6.7 cents, and even if they have to roll that in, that that's going to raise the price of electrical costs up. And when you say small and I say small, it means different things to different people. And I think this legislature should sit down and think about what that's going to mean, if it's at 12% or 8% or 9%, or whether we should plan to do what we had to do with the four-dam pool and have the state do the financing and the loan, the long-term takeout. And if we do that, what that's going to cost the state. And maybe the state should just get ready to do that. So that's the, you know, I bring it up as a point, and hopefully I'll be here in a couple of years when Bradley's done and get to see what the real answer is going to be.
Well, there is some, well, obviously we have about a 50% subsidy, or that's the plan, is to have about a 50%, call it what you want to,
right,
subsidy within Bradley Lake.
And hopefully the other portion can be doing a long-term takeout with private financing.
Right.
Are there any other questions, Bob? If not, thank you. Or Steve?
Bob, on these, you referred to it as a take and pay contract. That's different from a take or pay contract.
Whatever the project will put out, their Chugach is required to take 80% off. They are not required to pay in the event there's no production there. Take or pay generally means that even if you're not producing, you still pay.
Okay, if no production exists, then the bondholders are left holding the bag. Is that correct?
In the absolute legal senses, yes.
Maybe I shouldn't have said bondholders. Actually, it's a... Isn't it? What is it, a Japanese bank is doing the interim financing?
It's a consortium of Japanese banks.
They would, in fact, be holding the bag, because if there wasn't any production, that means it would have be no project, and
no project,
we would have never had any long-term financing in place.
Right. Well, who is at risk during construction here, Bob? The risk of completion of finishing this project when we started lays on who or whom?
placed basically upon the state, though we do have a partner in our financial. Ultimately, I doubt very much the state would choose to default.
So basically, the state's going to guarantee the completion of this project.
That, well, in the legal sense, the state would not have to. There's no general obligation here, nothing beyond a moral obligation sitting there. So in the legal sense, the state is morally but not legally required to make up a shortfall.
We're spending the entire session discovering the difference between those two terms, and some of us haven't found one yet. There are a couple other people who want to comment on this, so anybody have questions? Perhaps, Jim Baldwin, could you address the issue that was brought up on the special legislation issue that Bob mentioned on 699?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jim Baldwin from the Attorney General's office. This is particularly in reference to House Bill 699. There is an issue present. I don't think it's an overwhelming issue, but I think the committee should be on notice that it's present, because it's directed particularly to the rail belt area of the state, an argument can be made that this bill is special legislation benefiting only a limited area of the state, when under the Constitution you can only do special legislation if there's no other way you can make a general law applicable. However, there has been a state Supreme Court case within the last 10 years, I believe it's State v. Lewis, which holds that if it has, the area affected is of statewide significance, that the local and special requirement of the Constitution has been met. And since a large, over 50% of the population of the state lives in a rail belt, I think an argument can be made to uphold the validity of the statute proposed in 699 as being one of statewide application and not really one of special or local application. So I think we would be prepared to defend it under the Constitution.
Okay. So any questions of Jim?
Rick? Just one question. When I look on line 12 and all the way down to 14, the Department of Revenue shall manage the fund, and then interest received on the money in the fund shall be accounted for separately and may be appropriated into the fund annually. Is there any problem with that? How would that be done?
Well, the way that I interpret that language is that as a matter of bookkeeping, we keep track of what that amount of money would be earned on investments of the fund. It would not be segregated or held apart, but that we would, as a bookkeeping measure, keep track of that, report it to the legislature, and in the discretion of the legislature, it may be appropriated for the purpose expressed in the statute. In other words, it's an overt attempt to avoid any kind of dedication of that money whatsoever.
Okay.
If it's left entirely to the legislature's power to appropriate it, in our opinion, there would be no dedication of the money.
I mean, Mr. Chairman, if possibly could it be reappropriated somewhere else? Because it does say that it may be appropriated under the fund annually, only not that it shall be, or that is that just discretionary? In other words, could that money technically under the statute then be appropriated somewhere else?
I think it can, and that's one of the reasons it's put there. It's not a shall. It's not a dedicated fund, and I think the other items that we deal with this, we usually put them in the front end of the budget anyway. But it's up to each legislature. Representative Cotton?
Well, the fact is that the interest would go into the general fund. And the only thing that would be applicable here is that you would know how much that was. So if you chose to reappropriate it back into the rail belt fund, you would know how much it was. But otherwise, it would just be in the general fund available for appropriation.
So if we did nothing, we could always use it for somewhere else.
It would just be in the general fund.
Any other questions, Representative Frank?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim, is there a suggestion that you might make to make this a little bit, make your case a little bit tighter on the special legislation issue? I mean, I'd rather see no court case at all, and rather than seeing you defend it. I know you're prepared to defend it, but I'd rather see no case at all.
Yeah. Well, I can't say my track record's been all that good lately, but I think we could successfully defend this statute. I think it'd be a good case. It's not one that's free from doubt, but any time you indicate a specific area of the state, I think it's our obligation to tell you that issue is present, and this area has been one of frequent litigation. So I think it's best that you're warned that it's a possibility this could happen. The only way I could see to avoid it would be to have a fund of general application that just said power development, period. And then you would remove the issue.
If I could continue. If we're setting up this fund for rail belt energy, and next year we're going to require the legislature to make appropriations from that fund, we're still going to need the same number of votes and the same level of support to make any expenditures from that fund. So what would be the difference in having a energy fund or a rail belt energy fund? Practical matter.
Not from a legal standpoint, none.
Thank you.
What's the, I guess, the other side, the downside, if, you know, we don't change this to legislation, it goes to court, and it's somehow you find out we're wrong and this is special legislation. The worst is it just becomes an account in the general fund, doesn't it?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm not really sure. There are two choices. One is that the appropriation is totally void, and it goes to the general fund. The other one is that it is an appropriation generally available for power development. I'm not prepared to advise you now how it would be. Generally, in the area where you have a condition in an appropriation that fails, the argument has been made in court that the entire appropriation is void, not that the condition just falls out. So reasoning from that, I would say that the money would just be in the general fund, but I'm not prepared to tell you with any degree of certainty now.
Appreciate it. Any other questions for Jim? Thank you very much. Going down the list, Ken Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Ken Johnson, and I'm representing the Alaska Rural Electric Cooperative Association. I'll make my comments short because you've heard testimony from me before on House Bill 477 in prior committee hearings on the legislation. Although it was in a slightly different form at that time. The legislation, the appropriation of $200 million to develop rail belt energy in the future is very important to our members that serve the rail belt area. We have four from Homer, Matanuska, Chugach, and Golden Valley that serve almost all of the consumers in the rail belt area. And we've expressed to the legislature in the past that to take on a project of major proportion to supply the energy needs of the rail belt in the future will require state assistance. And this legislation certainly would aid in that respect. As far as House Bill 699, when I testified before the committee before, I stated that our concern was that the money be set aside and saved, that the main concern, that is the main concern of the utilities, and that the legislature, however you determine the money should be saved, why the utilities would certainly concur.
Okay.
I think that they'll limit.
Any questions for Ken, Pat?
I'd just like to ask you the same question that we asked Mr. Heath, and that's what do you see as some of the downside risks of proceeding with Bradley? I mean, do you see them as, or what are the downside risks for Anchorage consumers or cost overruns that might fall back onto the state somehow or to the utilities?
What? At this time, Representative Pichot, I think that the Bradley Lake project looks very promising. It, given the current estimates for cost of power, Chugach and Homer Electric negotiated in good faith with the power authority, and if the project proceeds as planned, the utilities have signed agreements to take on up to $200 million in debt for the project. And right now, I think that the utilities in negotiating and signing that contract feel that the project is a very good one that will provide long-term source of energy at a reasonable cost of power, when it comes online.
Just one other question. What does it mean for those of us in Anchorage on Chugach's service if we were to roll in to our rate base Bradley at, say, 7 cents a kilowatt hour? What does that mean to my electric bill?
How much would the increase be? I don't have that figure for you, and I'd be afraid to speculate what the increased cost would be at this time. I'd certainly be glad to provide you with that information.
I'd be interested in seeing.
Okay.
Appears to me, if Bradley puts out, well, it's 90 megawatt nameplate, but it's 42 megawatt right. continuous, then you're going to take 80% of that. It's about 34, 36 megawatts into whatever the Chugach overall bases may not be overwhelming, but like I say, small is a real different number when you go to Anchorage. So. Frank, did you have a...
No, I'll pass.
Rick? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
George Cruz?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is George Cruz. I'm president of the Alaska State Chamber of Commerce, and I shall be very brief. Just simply want to get on record that our organization is supportive of both of these pieces of legislation.
Appreciate it. Any questions for George? Okay.
Thank you, Mr.
We have one more person, Scott. I don't know how you always end up testifying last in all these committees, Scott. You have to get here earlier. So. Oh, I see.
Yeah, I said it.
Electricity.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Scott Heilman. I'm Executive Director of the Alaska Environmental Lobby. Coalition of 20 conservation groups from around the state. In particular about these two bills, House Bill 699, creating a rail belt energy fund. The environmental lobby supports the bill because it brings state funding for power projects back into the legislative process. And I think it makes at least a stab towards making a distinction between energy and power when we talk about rail belt energy needs. House Bill 477, the reappropriating $200 million the environmental lobby supports the changes that the committee substitute makes, changing the words from Susitna to rail belt energy. That also is a good first stab at the symbol that we don't have a one-project solution out there. Okay. However, in general, the environmental lobby opposes House Bill 477. We feel that this money is unnecessary and could be better spent in ways that all of us could sit around and think of pretty easily. In fact, there will be no great energy crisis in the rail belt. And on the record, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to predict a decrease in electricity demand over the same 50-year period that we make all these predictions for Susitna about. I don't believe that this decreased demand will not be because of gloomy oil prices or a depression looming on the horizon. That's another whole issue. But because of an energy revolution happening quietly all around the country. Part of that energy revolution to understand what's going on is to realize that there's two basic philosophies or paradigms for energy strategies in the country. There's one which you all are very intimately acquainted with, and that's the forecast and build paradigm, where you forecast electricity demand over the life of a project, 50 years for Susitna. You come up with the upfront money to construct it, which is what we've all been fighting over the last 3 or 4 years to figure out how to do that. You charge a high fixed rate, and you hope the sales will increase to cover the costs. It's a 50-year gamble. This has been Alaska's philosophy to date, and in fact, most of you are probably like me. As I went through those points, you could probably picture the graphs in your mind, like I can. A brisk forecast of demand, remember that graph from the APA, 3%. State money to construct, remember all those graphs about how we're going to come up with the money and shuffle it here and there. A high fixed rate, that's that other graph. In fact, in the case of Susitna, we've had to have a state subsidy to... The utility's doing it's bet your company. You're betting your company that your forecast is correct. And in the state's example, we're betting a pool of money. The other way to look at things, which is fast becoming the way utilities around the country are doing it, and that I would advocate the state do, is induced least cost energy planning. By that, that kind of energy planning is a recognition that electricity competes not only with fossil fuels, but also with efficiency technologies. Those kind of technologies are lights that produce the same amount of light using 75 to 95% less electricity. They're appliances that function exactly like appliances do now, but use one-fifth the amount of electricity. They're buildings that, through the use of space heating, water heating, ventilation, insulation, actually don't need any external heating source. And they're industrial motor drives that are changing the way industry is happening around the country. Investing in efficiencies has many advantages over the forecast and build method. First, it reduces the level of demand. Second, it reduces the uncertainty of demand. You don't have to predict on a 50-year basis. Third, it reduces the gamble. You're not gambling a pool of time. And in fact, utilities around the country, if we're talking in the Susitna project, we're talking about the about a 50-year period of gambling. Utilities around the country are finding that 15 years is too much, and they're opting for strategies that have a payback in 5 years and some even 1 year. And lastly, and best for the utilities, is that it produces profits, investing in efficiencies. Utilities around the country are buying efficiencies right now as an alternative to producing more electricity, and they're making money doing it. Amory Lovins uses the phrase megawatts to mean buying electricity versus building plants that produce megawatts. In other words, if you have projected demand, instead of going out and building a new coal plant, a new power plant, the utilities actually invest their money in these kinds of efficiencies to produce the same amount of energy in megawatts, i.e. in saved energy. In fact, 50% of Americans right now can get efficiency loans or rebates from utilities, 50%. This is what's happening around the country. In a recent study, the state of Wisconsin asked a firm to do, through these kinds of efficiency technologies, the study determined that three-fifths of their electricity could be saved at less than 2 cents a kilowatt hour. Now, let me make this clear. I'm not asking the state to do this. The market forces that are doing this around the country are going to bring the utilities in, screaming and dragging if they have to. The efficiency revolution is such that utilities are going to choose between participation or obsolescence. And the reason for that is that you can't force people to buy electricity. In one form or another, if these efficiencies are going to become available, either utilities can market them or utilities can build the same plants and then not be able to pay for them. Because if the utilities don't market them, which is the trend that's going on around the country, then entrepreneurs are going to market them and cut the utilities right out. So I just want to reiterate that I'm not up here asking the state for $200 million. Basically, the environmental community believes that the state doesn't need that money to, quote, solve the energy problem, because there's not going to be an energy problem in the rail belt. However, if you are intent on figuring out subsidies and ways to use this money, I'd direct your attention to the most efficient bang for your buck, so to speak. A study on the federal level looked at the way dollars were used in federal subsidies for a various set of energy programs. For these kinds of induced efficiency technologies I've been talking about, in FY84 on the federal level, 13 million BTUs were supplied per dollar of subsidy. For coal, 5.8 million BTUs were supplied per dollar of subsidy. For natural gas, 3.8 million BTUs supplied per dollar of subsidy. Crude oil, 2.4 million BTUs supplied per dollar of subsidy. And hydro, 0.4 million. So even if you are intent on, if this legislature or the next one is intent on using this Railroad Energy Fund for subsidies, I would hope that it was directed towards the most efficient use of that money. Finally, Mr. Chairman, appreciate your patience. The state can do some things in our eyes. You don't have to just sit there twiddling your thumbs. One example, which is the reason I have this prop up here, is you could adopt efficiencies in state buildings, just to set a good example, and also to save a lot of money. This light bulb, for instance, right here, you can buy off the shelf right now. It produces 75 watts of light, but it only uses 18 watts of energy. 75 watts of light isn't really a measurement of light. We're going to have to stop using that because these light bulbs are making that form of measurement obsolete. It produces the equivalent amount of light that a normal 75 incandescent bulb does. It's a little fluorescent bulb twisted up in there. That means that, in effect, this light is a 57-watt power plant. It lasts 8 times as long as standard bulbs, and its wholesale price is $15. It's $25 off the shelf right now. If we crank through the numbers on it, and actually, I have this in a handout if the committee's interested. Just pass it around. we have this light bulb and we look at the savings in energy that it produces, if you assume that it burns 8 hours a day for 7 days a week, for instance, then each bulb would last about 2.5 years, okay, without replacing. And each bulb would then save 166 kilowatt hours per year. That's each bulb. So I guess the point I'm trying to get across here is that this light bulb produces electricity power in savings. It produces, in fact, the cost per kilowatt hour is 1.65 cents for this bulb. If we would like to compare that to a couple hydroelectric projects, the Wautana Dam, according to the APA, would come in at about 13.5 cents kilowatt per hour. So this light bulb is costs per kilowatt hour 12% of what Wautana would cost. And for Devil Canyon, which I guarantee you we'll be hearing a lot more of in the next few years, the APA estimates come in at 8 cents per kilowatt hour. This would produce energy at 21% of the cost. Let's talk about the savings in dollars. We've talked about the savings in energy. How does that correlate into money? This light bulb will produce $22.25 net economic benefits in 1985. And earlier today, Mr. Chairman, I came in and counted the number of light bulbs we have overhead. And according to my ciphering, there's 36 up there. If you replaced, right now, if you went and bought these light bulbs at $15, it's the wholesale price, and you replace these 36 bulbs in this room, assuming that the lights are on for 8 hours a day for 7 days a week, which isn't perhaps accurate for the legislature, but might be more accurate for another state office building, you would save the state $792 this year alone. The whole point of this is not that we're going to solve everything with light bulbs. This is just one of the technologies that was easy for me to bring up. And this is the kind of technology that utilities are peddling all across the country. They're not coming to the states and asking them for a lot of money. This is what you're going to be seeing coming in the years ahead. And I guess I'll conclude my testimony there, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Questions?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, just one brief question. If you considered every utility user in Anchorage as far as electricity, or let's say in the Rail Belt area, did you figure out if every person installed one of these bulbs in their home, how many cents you would save in kilowatts?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ewing, I haven't figured that out. This is as far as I've gone, except over a beer the other night on a napkin, which I lost. I forget what it was, but it's pretty frightening. One of the things we've talked about is if the state was intent on spending money, you could send out five of these bulbs with a permanent fund dividend, just buy them. And it's frightening how many power plants would go out of business.
In Alaska.
The other thing, Mr. Chairman, I'll put is $15 wholesale. The state of Arizona just bought one of these bulbs to replace in every one of their sockets in state office buildings, and they got them for $9, bulk rate. So I think you could do some real wheeling and dealing on them. There's five of these kinds of bulbs built in the U.S., and there's a bunch in Japan that are built cheaper.
Could maybe get Representative Miller to put it on his gasoline hotline. The light bulb. Dave, do you have a question?
I was just going to ask you, Scott, about the how these utilities are investing in this kind of technology. You talked about getting loans for retrofitting or whatever. Obviously, they don't make a loan to buy a light bulb, but can you elaborate on some of those?
Sure, and some of this I'm pretty shaky on because it gets into some strange concepts in economics that I'm not real good at. For instance, right now, Chugach Electric has a program where they offer, I believe it's 3% loans. And I guess I'll just run through this, and if it doesn't make sense, we'll either try again or I'll get the information to you. But I think the way it works is that it's rather than take the risk of producing and of building a new plant and risking for 15, 20, whatever the period of the time is, rather than do that, you take your money, your upfront money, and you invest it in these conservation or savings by some kind of program where you offer people a low-cost loan, a low-interest loan. You actually end up making more money because you're saving, you're producing energy in megawatts, the amount of energy that you don't have to produce by burning the coal or building the hydro plant. It's the best I can do. Amory Lovins was at the energy conference, and it all made perfect sense when I heard about it. Economists are much better at this than I am. I didn't really want to bring this up because your eyes are all going to glaze over when you hear this, but at that $9 rate, economists figured out, if you got the $9 rate, you save more money in the maintenance and replacement costs, not having to pay someone to go up there and unscrew the 8 bulbs, that you don't even have to talk about the electricity. You save the money just in the O&M.
We'll talk to Mac about how to take care of the building. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. I'm not sure how many legislators it would take to replace all the light bulbs.
Better keep your eye on that light bulb.
If there are no other questions or issues from the committee on 699 or 477, any other issues, Pat?
I just want to make one comment. I did read Ms. Kramer's letter, and I think, at least as you get near the back of the letter, I don't know what your impression was, Mr. Chairman, but I was, I guess, persuaded that we aren't going out on much of a limb in terms of a dedicated fund here, and if we are, we're in good company. We've got other funds like that.
There's quite a few there.
Was that your impression?
Yeah. The money is not going to disappear. So, okay, I need a motion to move 699.
Did you already adopt the CS?
Not for 699.
Oh, we have 699. It's just the bill.
I've moved to pass out 699.
Okay, I have a motion to move House Bill 699 with individual recommendations. No opposition. It's passed. Okay, 477. Yeah, I do need to adopt the CS.
I'd move to ask council to adopt the CS for House Bill 477 alone.
Is there any objection to adopting committee substitute for House Bill 477? Hearing none, the committee substitute's adopted.
I move to ask the 477 from committee.
The motion is to move committee substitute for House Bill 477 loans from the committee with individual recommendations. Any opposition? Not, the bill moves to the next committee of referral, which is finance. Okay, one more item in front of the committee today. We have House Bill 135, and we don't have much time left in this committee room because it's supposed to be used here. But we had a committee substitute for House Bill 135, which is a small business loan guarantee program. I would like to move it on to finance. Is there any questions or issues from the committee?
Chair, I move we adopt the committee substitute loans.
The motion to adopt the committee substitute House Bill 135 loans. Okay, no opposition. That's adopted.
I move report.
There's a motion to report CS for HB 135 loans from the loans committee. Individual recommendations. Any questions? Rick, you had your hand up. There's a motion here to move the bill.
Is this the Small Business Loan Fund?
Yeah, Small Business Loan Guarantee Program.
I don't have an objection, Mr.
Okay. Most of the bill was House Bill 523, so we'll just use the HB 523 fiscal note on it. And no opposition, the bill moves to finance. Everybody sign the reports?
Sign the reports.
Okay, anybody who has a bill in Loans Committee that they would like to hear, I'd appreciate somebody letting me know. We're going to try to get this committee cleaned up here.
How many bills?
Yeah, I think you might have one around.
Well, I got one.
Duncan, we just put my bill in yours.
Let me use your pen, please.
What's the
bank's page or
something? Yeah.
We'll get
that
coming up,
I think. We should move that out of here anyway. Just
House Bill 51 is going to come up.
Just wait, what does it do? Oh, the senior housing. Wow. That's going to help. I guess we need to.
Sure. Quick. Before we get the HCR 49. John, I'll meet you in the lounge if you got any time to talk about MELA.
Yeah. This morning, I had three committee meetings going on this morning. Yes, we're adjourned.
John, there is a...